Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC. Land auctions, farm management, financial services, and institutional and corporate real estate. Information on upcoming land auctions can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for September 4th, 2013. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Clymers, Indiana. And we'll get the latest on crop progress from key corn and soybean states. University of Illinois entomologists say the western corn rootworm once again is outmaneuvering science. Todd Gleason will have a report. And Drew Lerner will have the latest on agricultural weather. It's all on the Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and drydown data, is at AgriGold.com.
Let's see how futures settled on this Wednesday afternoon in Kansas City. Hard red September wheat, 705, up 8 and a quarter. December, 698, down 1. Soft December wheat at 646 and a quarter, down 1. September corn, 494, down 4. December, 464 and a half, down 5 and 3 quarters. March, 482 and a half, down 5 and a half. July, 497, down 5 and a quarter. September soybean, 1397 and 3 quarters, down 37 and 3 quarters. November, 1352 and a half, down 34 and a half. January, 1351, down 34. July of 14, 1298 and 3 quarters, down 23 and a quarter. September soybean meal, 468.60, down 1680. October, 428, down 1550. September soybean oil, 43.56, down 26. October, 43.63, down 27. Last trade, October live cattle, 125.92 and a half, down 27 and a half. And October lean hogs at 89 even, and they are down $1. And those are your last trades and settlements in Kansas City and Chicago.
Support for WILL comes from Bates Commodities, AgriGold, the Andersons, Wisconsin Plastic Drain and Tile, Strategic Farm Marketing, and Farm Credit Services. Thanks to these businesses for their support of WILL agricultural programs.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says warming is expected in most of the U.S. Midwest over the coming week, with temperatures back into an above-average mode for much of the period. Normal highs at this time of the year are in the 70s in the north and lower 80s in the south, and most highs will be in the 80s with a few upper 70s in the Great Lakes region and a few lower 90s in the southwest. Today's forecast continues restricted U.S. Midwest rainfall over the next several days. Isolated to scattered showers will occur in the northwest through Friday, with resulting rainfall staying mostly light. A cool front drifting south from Canada will bring some increase in rainfall briefly Saturday and Sunday from Michigan to Iowa and southern Minnesota. The frontal system will stall out Sunday and return northward as a warm front late Sunday and Monday. That will result in some thunderstorms of significance in northern Illinois, southern Wisconsin, and northeastern Iowa, rainfall of 2/10 to 3/4 of an inch, and local totals over 1 inch.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and service geared specifically to the agricultural community.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at the futures market is Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and he is in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Boy, the bears really tried to push that market around today. Sell, sell, sell.
Yeah, we saw quite a bit of sell paper coming to the pit. There was some scale-down buying, but not enough to really offset the so-called fund selling. They sold over, well, going into midday at least, 12,000 contracts of beans, 3,400 bean oil, 4,000 meal, 4,000 corn, about 2,000 wheat contracts. I think there's some unwinding of the spread, too. They were heavy buyers of beans, sellers of corn and wheat, and obviously yesterday they unwinding that spread, selling beans and buying back some short corn and wheat positions there. Beans, you know, kind of interesting. They got down into the gap area. They left there over a week and a half ago and sort of tried to climb up out of that gap area. It's going to be kind of important, you know, if you want the trend to remain higher here, to sort of see support on these breaks in here. Speculative trade-wise, I believe you're going to see the trade come in and buy the market this evening and place some stops just under today's lows, looking for a low recovery going into Thursday's trade.
Were there any fundamental reasons for the sell-off today?
By the rumor, sell the fact. Crop conditions report, you know, showed the deterioration, and once those numbers came in, I think they sort of used that as bullish news, and feeling that bullish news is priced in and liquidated. Ideas, Asia is going to release some more reserves, maybe a little slow down there. Technically, you know, a little overbought on the technical side, momentum indicator suggesting a correction. Then lastly, as you mentioned there, the weather forecast, a little bit more moisture in the forecast for the northern regions. Not everybody's going to enjoy precipitation, but just the idea of some more moisture and being thrown at the Corn Belt kind of limited the buying interest.
Do you believe the gap will hold this week in November beans?
Boy, that's a good question. It just depends on the weather. I believe it's going to hold, and I think we'll come in here Sunday evening, Monday, and either be off the races or gap lower and leave an island top. But, you know, there's a lot of news between now and 1:15 on Friday.
How much longer is the window open regarding soybeans being able to put on yield?
Well, I think it's open till the end of the month, of course. You know, as far as putting on big bushels, I think it's more of a function to stop the decline in yield. Reuters had one of their estimates out on survey of analysts, and the average analyst guess is about 41 bushels to the acre versus 42.6. So we, you know, ideas are we've lost about a bushel and a half. Corn yield down about a half a bushel to the acre there. So I think it's more of a function to see the decline stop. But we're going to have rain in the real dry areas because where there's been rain, you know, additional rain, yeah, it's going to keep the yield up there, but I don't know if it's going to add a whole lot to the outlook there, Dave.
Do you think the national yield will ultimately be under 40?
Well, that's where we need Chuck Shelby come in and say, I'll eat that cup if it's about 40.
That's right.
Oh, good old Chuck. Kind of hard to say right here. I think it's close to 40 or a little above 40. Like I mentioned before, I believe that a lot of it's going to depend on what they do with harvested acres. Locally here, looking out our back window, it's kind of hard to believe. You know, we're going to be at the upper end there due to the dry conditions. Also, too, when you look at the good to excellent category, I know it's a visual observation. It's kind of hard to believe and compare that to past history will be a whole lot above 40. The thing, too, on visual observations, guys go out in the field, pod counts vary a lot, but Pro Farmers Crop Tour verified the pod counts aren't there in some areas, especially some good producing areas. And, two, it's going to take some moisture to go ahead and fill out those beans and make good quality beans.
In addition to the weather, The trade will be looking forward to crop production and WASDE numbers. Do you expect any surprises come a week from?
Well, that's a good question. I think they'll probably adjust production a little bit, but that might be offset on the demand side a little bit. I believe they're going to be a lot braver when we go into the October crop report. We are, you know, having some early harvest activity, and early harvest activity in some areas is fairly good on corn, you know, 180, 200 bushel corn in some areas, but those are areas that planted earlier season corn and received generous amount of moisture through the growing season. So October is going to be a lot more of a market maker here on actual yield surveys.
Thank you much, Kurt.
Take care, Dave.
That's Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and he is in Normal, Illinois. Generally, he speaks to us on Monday afternoons, but he is filling in this afternoon for Jackie Vakes, and we give him a tip of the hat for that.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
Here are crop conditions as of September 1st. Corn in dough stage, 84% versus 70% last week, and the five-year rolling average of 89%. Corn dented, 42% versus 23% last week, and the five-year rolling average of 61%. Corn rated mature is 4% versus the five-year rolling average of 17%. Crop conditions for corn, good to excellent, 56%. That's down 3 percentage points from last week. Fair, 28%, poor, 11%, and very poor, 5%. For soybeans, setting pods, 92% versus 84% last week, and the five-year rolling average of 96%. Soybean conditions look like this. Good to excellent, 54%. That's down 4 percentage points from a week ago. Fair, 31%, poor, 11%, and very poor, 4%.
This is Mark Schleusener, state statistician for Illinois with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. I am reporting on crop progress and conditions for the week ending Sunday, September 1st. Last week was hot and dry across Illinois. The state average temperature was more than 6 degrees above normal, and average rainfall was more than half of an inch below normal. Topsoil moisture declined and is now rated 27% very short, 50% short, and 23% adequate. Subsoil moisture also declined and is now rated 16% very short, 50% short, and 34% adequate. There was an average of 6.6 days suitable for field work last week. Nearly half of corn acres have reached the dent stage or beyond. 46% of acres are in the dent stage, compared to 94% last year and 69% for the five-year average. There are a few reports of corn reaching maturity, but less than 1% of acres. The condition of the corn crop is now rated as 14% in very poor or poor condition, 29% fair, and 57% of corn acres are in good or excellent condition. Turning now to soybeans, 91% of acres are setting pods, compared to 99% 1 year ago and 97% normally. 4% of acres are turning yellow, compared to 38% 1 year ago and 20% for the five-year average. The condition of the soybean crop is now rated as 13% of acres are in very poor or poor condition, 35% are in fair condition, and 52% of soybean acres are in good or excellent condition. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Illinois Field Office of the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
Hello, this is Andy Higgins with the Indiana Field Office of USDA NAS, and this is the Crop Progress and Condition Report for the week ending September 1st. Signs of stress were evident in corn and soybeans due to the recent hot, dry weather. Total precipitation from Monday, August 26th through Sunday, September 1st, ranged from zero in several locations to 3.91 inches at Stendel. The corn crop is being forced to mature earlier than expected in many areas because of the heat and lack of moisture. 91% of the corn acreage is in the dough stage compared with 99% last year and 91% for the five-year average, and 47% of the corn acreage is in the dent stage. Condition of the corn crop is rated 66% good to excellent compared with 8% last year at this time. 95% of the soybean acreage is setting pods, compared with 99% last year and 95% for the five-year average. Soybean condition is rated 62% good to excellent, compared with 20% last year at this time. Some entire soybean fields are starting to come to maturity and are beginning to turn color, while only portions of other fields are turning because of disease issues. Spider mites are beginning to show up in some soybean fields, but have remained below critical levels. Livestock remained in mostly good condition, with only minor stress being reported due to the heat. Several livestock operations have already been harvesting corn silage. Pasture condition declined further during the week, but is still rated 36% good to excellent, compared with only 8% last year at this time. The third cutting of alfalfa is 91% complete, compared with 89% last year and 84% for the five-year average. This is Andy Higgins reporting.
This is Katie Handel, agricultural statistician for the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Iowa Field Office. The hottest temperatures in over a year allowed crops to mature, but crop conditions deteriorated in a response to the heat and lack of moisture. Temperatures for the week averaged about 12 degrees above normal, with a high of 104 degrees recorded at Des Moines and Fort Madison on Friday. Although most of Iowa received little or no rainfall, western parts of the state experienced beneficial rain. Statewide rainfall averaged 28 hundredths of an inch, about one-third of the normal amount. Rain fell in a narrow band from the Newton-Marshalltown area northeastward to Dubuque, with a maximum report of just under 2.5 inches overnight Friday. Rains of an inch or more fell in the southwest half of Iowa overnight Saturday. Topsoil and subsoil moisture levels rated in the adequate and surplus categories fell 6 and 8 percentage points from last week and are now at 22 and 26% respectively. The lowest soil moisture rating was reported in south central Iowa, where 78% of topsoil was in the very short category. Overall, the condition of both corn and soybeans declined from last week, and only 39% of both the corn and soybean crops now rated in good to excellent condition. With 94% of the corn crop in the milk stage, 73% has reached the dough stage, and 33% has reached the dent stage, 12 days behind normal. Meanwhile, 93% of the soybean crop was setting pods, 5 percentage points behind normal. This is Katie Andel reporting from the USDA NASS Iowa Field Office.
The Monday before Labor Day, entomologists from the University of Illinois traveled to Livingston and Kankakee counties to look at corn decimated by the western corn rootworm. Todd Gleason has more on the trip and why it is very bad news for farmers.
It's a bad deal. The western corn rootworm causes more damage to the nation's corn crop than any other insect. It keeps adapting. Over the decades, it's adapted to chemical, cultural, and now genetic attempts to control it. It appears the latest chapter in the saga of the western corn rootworm will be the development of an insect resistant to the first GMO BT expressions and the cultural practice of crop rotation used to control it. Extension entomologist Mike Gray from the University of Illinois went to Kankakee and Livingston counties the last Monday of August to verify the development.
What made this story, I think, unique is the fact that this was severe corn rootworm damage on rotated corn. All right, now we know we have a rotation-resistant western corn rootworm in this state, and that's been the case for about a decade and a half. But what made this very unique was the severity of damage, the intense root feeding, the lodging. Again, rotated corn ground and BT had been used in those fields. So we've had a lot of reports, not only in this state, but in some other Corn Belt states, that at least in continuous corn production systems, some BT hybrids, those that express the Cry3BB1 protein, the yield guard rootworm protein, we're having some issues. This is the first in that we're now talking about rotated corn.
It is easy to confirm the western corn rootworm in the fields is rotation resistant, but still needs to be done to be sure. The same thing goes for the BT resistance. The one commonality among the affected corn fields was that they were single-traded VT triple pro varieties. Gray has some recommendations for next year.
Definitely consider the use of a pyramided BT hybrid, one that expresses more than a single Cry protein. If you go down that road, a soil insecticide should not be needed with those pyramided BT hybrids. On the other hand, if you decide to go with a single traded BT hybrid, particularly one that has shown some has had some performance issues, then a soil insecticide on top of that single traded BT hybrid makes sense. And then one other consideration too, again, we can still go with some non-BT hybrids and use of soil insecticides on those.
There are options farmers battling the ever-changing western corn rootworm can use, but Gray says there aren't that many arrows left in the rootworm quiver. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now with Cash Grain Analysis is Scott Butcher of the Andersons in Clymers, Indiana. Good afternoon, Scott.
Good afternoon.
Quiet phones or busy phones?
Yeah, quiet today. With the market being down today, the futures down, it was pretty quiet.
In this run-up, in the last 2 weeks in the soybeans, how much selling has been going on over there?
A good amount of selling, you know, especially there's new crop beans that probably are not going to go in the bin, that, you know, are going to probably come to town because most folks feel like they have a, you know, a pretty good corn crop, so they're going to try to store as much corn as possible. So a lot of the beans, obviously, will probably hit the market. So, you know, seen good movement on those.
Good movement on beans, and people are saying they're storing their corn crop. Hmm?
Yeah, that's what it feels like today anyway.
So what do you think for a price to pry it out of their hands once they put it in the bin?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you ask them, they'll tell you $7. I mean, I don't know how realistic that is today, but, you know, certainly everybody is looking for something better than $4.50 to $5.
And what are your feelings on how the corn is in your neck of the woods regarding potential yield potential?
It feels pretty good. I mean, it really, you know, in our area, don't get me wrong, we've had you know, some areas that have been hurt over the last 2-3 weeks with some hotter weather, and we were missing, you know, rains here and there. So, you know, really didn't have much to speak of. But, you know, I still think overall the, you know, the corn crop in our area is going to be really good.
How soon before harvest do you think?
We're probably looking at the week of the 16th. You know, it really feels like to me like the 16th through the 20th here of September will you know, see, you know, more than just one or two combines go to the field.
Pretty decent corn crop. What about a bean crop? You think you're going to have a bean crop?
Yeah, beans are a little bit harder to tell. I mean, the plants look good. They're healthy. You know, we obviously put a lot of pods on because of the cooler weather and some good rainfall early. But then we, you know, obviously we've been hurt a little bit by the drier weather, too. So it's hard to tell exactly how big the beans are going to be. You know, it feels like the beans will be smaller, but, you know, hopefully there's a lot of them.
What do you think about how basis will react to harvest this year?
Well, it feels like things are going to stay strong, you know, for a while here until we see exactly when combines go to the field and exactly, you know, what moistures are going to look like coming out of the field. Is the crop going to be wet? Is it going to dry down? You know, there's a lot of questions that factor into basis and, you know, certainly affect basis as, you know, basically as we go through harvest.
Why don't we go ahead and get your prices today then?
Cash corn tonight, we're $6.20. Soybeans, $14.53.
Thank you very much, Scott.
Thank you.
That's Scott Butcher of the Andersons, and he is in Clymers, Indiana. In 2 minutes, I'll be back with a look at agricultural weather with Drew Lerner, meteorologist of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. It's National Macadamia Nut Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1783, Frederick Tudor was born. An American businessman long before refrigeration, he was among the first to create an export trade in block ice, harvested from frozen freshwater ponds in New England in the winter. The ice was shipped to India, Europe, and the Caribbean. In 1801, Colin Whipple was born. An American inventor and machinist, he patented the first practical screw machine in the U.S. for making pointed screws. Early screws had blunt ends, making it necessary to drill a starter hole. He also invented and patented seven other machines for improving the manufacture of screws. In 1885, the Exchange Buffet opened the first self-service restaurant. In 1888, George Eastman was issued a landmark U.S. patent for his box camera. On the same day, he registered the trademark name Kodak. The camera used a fixed-focus lens fast enough to take practically instantaneous exposures and held enough film for 100 pictures. And in 1917, Irving Colburn died, an American inventor. His process for fabricating continuous sheets of flat glass made mass production of glass for windows possible. Colburn went bankrupt before the technology was perfected, and he was bought out by the Toledo Glass Company, who hired him on to finalize the technology. And that's this day in agricultural history. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at agricultural weather is World Weather Incorporated meteorologist Drew Lerner. Good afternoon, Drew.
Good afternoon, Dave.
It does appear that there is some divergence between the various models regarding rainfall totals across the Corn Belt in the next several days.
Oh, my. Yeah, that's quite a frustrating comment. Indeed, it's true. You know, the key is really all about the tropics right now, believe it or not. Our weather is going to be largely influenced by what's going on outside of the country. There's a tropical disturbance that's down in the Caribbean that's being closely monitored. It may turn out to be a tropical cyclone a little bit later this week or into the weekend, a tropical storm or maybe a tropical depression. And it will come up through the Bahamas, perhaps, and then maybe off the waters east of the United States. But the point of this is that if it does indeed move into that area and is a significant storm, we could see a ridge of high pressure build up across the Midwest and further minimize the potential for rainfall. And we could go into another full week worth of dry and warm weather. So that would be an unwelcome event for those areas that are still suffering from chronic dryness. And there is a large part of the Midwest that's still in that mode. There's other models, though, that suggest this event isn't going to turn into a significant tropical cyclone, and it's going to end up moving off to the east and not have an influence on the U.S. And if that's the case, then we should see a frontal boundary move across the heart of the Midwest as we go into the next week that should offer some scattered showers and thunderstorms. So the bottom line, our official forecast at this point in time, is that we will see some showers occur this weekend across the Great Lakes region. As a cool front comes down from Canada, it'll produce upwards to 5 or 6 tenths of an inch of rain. It becomes stationary front across the northern areas and then move back to the north as we move towards early next week. And some areas in northern Illinois and portions of Wisconsin, northeastern Iowa, and Minnesota could see some moderate amounts of rain as the front goes back to the north. Everybody else, though, that I haven't mentioned, will probably be mostly dry as we go through the next 5 to 7 days. And a little later next week, we'll see a cool front come in from the western part of the U.S. that will scatter some showers and thunderstorms throughout the western Corn Belt, and then it's a bit debatable as to how much rain will occur in the lower eastern parts of the region. My guess at this point is most of the Corn Belt will probably see a quarter to three-quarters of an inch of rain next week. It's not heavy rain, obviously, and we will continue to keep warmer-than-usual temperatures.
Ah, there was a key, warmer-than-usual temperatures.
Indeed, and we'll probably see 80 and 90-degree temperatures back across a big part of the region. Most of those 90s will be from parts of Iowa and Nebraska into Kansas, Missouri, and western and southern Illinois, and down into the Delta. Areas further to the east will be mostly in the 80s.
What else should we be concerned about?
I think for the most part, in the North American continent, we don't have to worry about too much right now. Certainly in areas overseas, we're continuing to watch some dryness that's occurring in Australia and South Africa and Argentina, all three wheat-producing areas hurting for moisture right now. And there is a significant need for precipitation. Perhaps as we go through the second half of this month, Argentina will get a little bit better, but both South Africa and Australia will stay very dry.
Thank you, Drew.
Have a good day.
That's Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and that is today's Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey.